From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 26th day of July 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He's in New Market, Indiana. GrowMark's Harry Cooney will be here to look at the agricultural energy markets, and along the way, we'll hear from the statisticians in Illinois, Iowa, Nebraska, Minnesota, and Indiana. Those are the five top corn-producing states of the nation. And we'll take up electricity and farm safety. Baba Heron from U of I Extension will join us to cover that topic area. And it all happens right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
On this Tuesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The contracts in the wheat pit were higher. Nearby September at $6.94, up 5.5. December at $7.34.5, up 5.5 for the soft red. And the July of next year at $7.93.25, 3.75 higher. Hard red in Kansas City gained 11 cents to finish at $8.25.5. And back in Chicago, corn finished 11 cents higher as well at $6.89.75 in the September contract. December futures, $6.86.75, up 12.25. March corn at $6.99.5, 12.25 higher. And the May at $7.05.75, up a dozen cents. July at $7.11.25, up 11.75. Next year's December at $6.32.25 finished 11.5 cents higher for the day. August soybeans $13.83, up 17.5. September at $13.80.25, 15.75 higher. November beans $13.88.75, up 16.75. In January, $13.98.5, up 16.5 cents. November of next year at $13.50.25, 18 cents higher. August bean meal at $3.60.50, up $4.70. August soybean oil at $56.59, up 49 cents. Live cattle finished the August contract at $111.70, $1.05 higher for the day. The October at $116.15, up $1.25. August feeders at $136.10, 5 cents higher. And the August lean hogs today down 45 at $100.47.5. This is the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures trading the nearby contract at $99.58 a barrel, up 38 cents. August ethanol at $3.06.8, up 8.5 cents. Natural gas down 0.8 cents at $4.37.8. And the heating oil or diesel fuel just about 0.8 cents higher at $3.11.6. Gold futures finished $4.60 higher at $1,616.60 an ounce. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average is now down 47 points at 12,546. The dollar at 73.47 is down 0.59. And the CRB index on the afternoon at 348.75. 2.86 higher for the day. The weather forecast says the Urbana-Champaign area will see mostly sunny skies this afternoon, a high near 90 degrees with heat index values as high as 102, north-northwest winds at 3 to 5 miles per hour for the afternoon. An isolated thunderstorm is possible still this afternoon in the area and into the evening until sunset. This severe weather threat is low, though. Heavy downpours and frequent lightning are possible with isolated slow-moving thunderstorms. Heat indices, again, will peak from 100 to 105 degrees this afternoon. A new period of hot and humid conditions will develop later this week, too. The heat index then will be over 100 degrees, and that'll happen likely each afternoon. From this afternoon right through Friday, thunderstorm chances will return for Friday through Saturday as a cold front slowly moves into the area. The weather forecast says that tomorrow on Wednesday we should have mostly sunny skies and a high of 91. Thursday, sunny and high of 92. Friday, that chance of showers comes in. Still, it'll be partly sunny with a high near 90 degrees. A more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of this half hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
It's a Tuesday afternoon. Time to check the agricultural futures markets. Wayne Nelson is out of his office at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. For us, fortunately, John Hester is there to take up the slack. Thanks, John, for being with us, and we do appreciate you taking the time today.
No problem. I enjoy it.
Well, the weather forecast has been driving the market up and down at times. Is the hot weather what was driving the marketplace today?
I think that's probably part of it. They're talking more heat coming back in and maybe a chance of rain, you know, later in the week. Right here where I'm located, I think we got about a 20% chance, and we only got a tenth of an inch Sunday. So we're very dry here. If we don't get any rain in, you know, a week to 10 days, we're going to be hurting very severely. I think another thing that helped the market immensely today was the fact that the dollar is 60 cents lower. And, of course, that means foreign countries get more bang for their buck when they currency. They can buy more grain for a dollar today than they could yesterday. And I also think it's pretty impressive that Sunday night and yesterday the market was down on the rain. The more than expected rain that came through northern Illinois, northern Indiana, and parts of Ohio, and they drove the market down yesterday, and today maybe they've realized a little bit of a lot of the where some good, very good corn crop and bean crops were, didn't receive any rain, and maybe they've worked through the extra rain that we've got, and they're back to crop conditions again.
And so mostly it's about the eastern Corn Belt still as it was earlier in the season. But you do have to look out west occasionally, and as we'll hear a bit later in this particular program, Iowa seems to be in pretty good shape still, that according to the state statistician. Is that what you're hearing from the folks on the ground, too?
Yes, I think that the irrigated parts in Nebraska are very good. I think Iowa's very good, maybe a little late planted, and I think Minnesota is pretty good, and they were also a little late planted. But I think overall those three areas are very good, and, you know, probably 60% of the rest of the Corn Belt is suffering a little bit.
Now, there is some talk underneath the marketplace about soybeans potentially becoming explosive to the upside, depending on what happens with the weather forecast. Do you think the $14 area is really made to be taken out? And if it is, how high is high?
I think there's an excellent chance that $14 can be taken out. What is high? You know, I've heard numbers anywhere from, you know, 15 to 20 thrown around over the last couple months, and I think that all depends on the rain and the weather situation that we have in the middle of August. And, you know, I've heard numbers if the dry weather continues in the corn as high as $9, too, in the D's. But, you know, you get too high, nobody will want to buy it, and that will ration the crop and put a top in it.
John, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Mm-hmm. John Hester is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon. If you'd like to hear John again, you can always do that on our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find everything we produce during the day, from the pre-opening market report to the closing market report and everything in between. Posted not long after it airs for the very first time on our home radio station. And then you can also find Commodity Week, our weekly look at what's been happening in the world of agriculture. If you haven't listened to Commodity Week before, I invite you to do so now. Visit willag.org. One other note on the services that we provide to you. There's a really good newsletter there. Dave Dickey writes that. He's been on vacation for the last couple of weeks, so it's not been out. If you've been worried about not receiving it, it'll come back, not this weekend, but the following one. You can sign up on willag.org. www.iall.org over on the right-hand side of the page. And there's that final service, which we call our mobile analyst portal. And that one is just voicemail. You can dial us up at 217-333-3434 anytime you'd like. We update it with either the opening numbers or the closing numbers and a bit of analysis at 10:15 and 3:15 Central Time each and every business day of the week. It's all part of willag.org. It's public radio for the farming world.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Well, up next, the state statisticians from Iowa and Illinois, Indiana, Minnesota, and Nebraska will be here with an update of conditions in their regions.
This is Greg Tayson, director of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service Iowa Field Office, with the weekly crops and weather report for the week ending July 24, 2011. Iowa endured very hot and humid weather, but adequate soil moisture levels along with some additional rainfall late in the week helped crops come through the extremes without substantial stress. Insect populations in soybean fields appear to be on the rise, with many fields being treated. Flooded acreage along the Missouri River appears to be stabilizing in many areas. However, as levee breaches widen, some additional acres are being flooded. Statewide, average precipitation for the week was 1.17 inches compared with the weekly normal of 0.94 inches, and temperatures for the week as a whole averaged 8.9 degrees above normal, with several days of 95-plus degree highs recorded. 90% of the corn crop is now tasseling, and three-quarters of the crop is silking, ahead of the normal tasseling pace of 80% and the normal silking pace of 65%. Corn condition is reported at 80% good to excellent, unchanged from last week. 79% of the soybean crop is blooming, slightly ahead of the five-year average of 78%, and pods are setting on 24% of the crop, well behind the average of 36%. Soybean condition is reported at 80% good to excellent, down 2 points from last week. This is Greg Tayson reporting from the USDA NAS Iowa Field Office.
This is Greg Golson, agricultural statistician with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Illinois Field Office, reporting on crop progress and conditions for the week ending July 24th. Above normal temperatures along with below normal precipitation were once again prevalent across much of the state for the 7-day period ending July 24th. Temperatures averaged 84.5 degrees, 8 degrees above normal, while rainfall accumulations for the week came in at 9-tenths of an inch, 1-tenth of an inch below normal. Growing degree day units since May 1st ended the week at 1768. 97 units, or 6% ahead of the historic average. Statewide, corn in the silking stage advanced to 86% compared to 95% last year and 81% for the five-year average. 15% of all acres planted were reported in the dough stage compared to 38% 1 year ago and 23% for the five-year average. Overall, the corn crop was rated in 59% good or excellent condition, down 2 percentage points from last week. Soybean blooming progress ended the week at 67% and compared to 77% last year and 67% for the five-year average. 15% of soybeans have begun setting pods compared to 33% a year ago and 24% for the five-year average. Overall, the soybean crop was rated in 60% good or excellent condition, down 2 points from last week. This has been Greg Golson with the Illinois Field Office of the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Scott Keller with USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Nebraska Field Office with a crop progress report for the week ending July 24th, 2011. Hot, humid conditions stressed livestock and made animal care difficult. But these conditions, combined with limited rainfall, allowed wheat and hay harvest to progress rapidly. Topsoil moisture supplies were drawn down during the week, with irrigation active in many areas. Most of the corn crop had reached the pollination stage, with near three-fourths of the crop having silked. Statewide temperatures averaged 4 degrees above normal last week. Highs reached triple digits, but were mainly in the mid to upper 90s. Lows were recorded mostly in the 60s. Rainfall was light except for parts of central and eastern Nebraska. Corn condition rated mostly good to excellent, with just 6% of the crop having reached the dough stage. Soybean conditions rated mostly good to excellent, with 19% of the acreage setting pods. Wheat harvest jumped to 66% complete, but was still 6 days behind average. This is Scott Keller with USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, the Nebraska Field Office in Lincoln.
This is Dan Loftus, Deputy Director of the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, with the weekly crop weather report for the week ending July 24th, 2011. The development of small grains and field crops advanced significantly last week as high heat and humidity persisted across much of the state. As of July 24th, 54% of corn was at or beyond the soaking stage, a 43 percentage point advance from last week. But this is 27 points behind last year and 10 points behind the five-year average. 56% of corn crop was rated in good condition and 16% was rated excellent. 57% of soybeans were blooming with 10% setting pods. 54% of soybeans are rated in good condition and 15% were rated excellent. 30% of spring wheat was turning ripe at 20-point increase over last week, while barley advanced 19 points to 38% turning ripe. 54% of oats were turning ripe. All three small grain crops were rated in primarily good condition. Daytime highs in the mid to upper 90s combined with dew points in the low to mid 70s produce heat indices in excess of 115 degrees in some locations. This stressed livestock and poultry. Temperatures remained relatively warm until Sunday when daytime highs cooled into the mid to upper 70s statewide. Showers and thunderstorms developed Friday and Saturday, with precipitation amounts ranging from a half an inch to over 3 inches in some areas. That's the weekly crop weather report for the week ending July 24th, 2011. This is Dan Loftus, Deputy Director of the USDA Minnesota Field Office.
Hello, this is Greg Preston, Director of the USDA NAS Field Office for Indiana, and this is the crop weather report for the week ending July 24th. Another week of 90-plus degree temperatures, high humidity, and limited rainfall stressed the field crops and farmers. Most of the state experienced some triple-digit temperatures and high heat indexes that stressed livestock and raised concern at county fairs. Many areas of the state recorded temperatures over 10 degrees above normal. Scattered precipitation was not enough to reduce the farmers' concern of stress on corn during the critical pollination stage and in the soybeans blooming. Scattered storms that brought much-needed rain also brought high winds that caused lodging in shallow-rooted cornfields in some areas of the state. The drier soil moisture, along with high soil temperatures, resulted in some fields showing corn leaves firing on the lighter soils. 62% of the corn crop has silt, compared to 90% for last year and 71% for the five-year average. By area of the state, 59% of the corn has silt in the north, 64% in the central region, and 65% of the corn is silked in southern Indiana. Corn condition for the week dropped to 46% in the good to excellent category, compared to 62% last year at this time. 51% of the soybean acreage is blooming, compared to 77% for last year and 60% for the five-year average. By area of the state, 59% of the soybeans have bloomed in the north, 49% in the central region, and 41% in southern Indiana. 7% of the soybean acreage is setting pods, compared to 39% for last year and 18% for the five-year average. Soybean condition for the week was rated at 47% in the good to excellent category, compared to 64% last year at this time. This is Greg Preston reporting from the Indiana NAS Field Office.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from willag.org. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Now, up next, you know, farming is the most dangerous job in the nation and has been for most of the last decade. The number one killer on the farm is a tractor turnover. There are about 170 deaths on the farm each year from this one type of accident. But there are other dangers, too. I'll have more in a moment about the high-powered electrical lines on the farm. Electricity came to the farm in the 40s and the 50s and the 60s, pushed forward by the REA, the Rural Electric Administration. It made life and work easier, but brought with it new dangers that are still with us some 70 years later. says University of Illinois Extension Agricultural Safety and Health Program Leader Baba Heron.
Number one electrocution on farm is getting equipment caught in overhead power lines. And that's the issue there is just being able to avoid trying to, or moving like grain augers or where we're trying to going to raise the bed of a truck up or something, is to make sure we know where the overhead power lines are and stay, you know, significantly at least 10 feet clear of them by lowering the augers or making sure we're not raising our beds of our trucks or loading farm equipment on trailers underneath power lines. That's where we forget they're there and we get entangled and cause electrocution.
The second most common type of electrical accident on the farm is called a ground fault electrocution. It happens when a piece of electrical equipment is not properly grounded.
So the critical thing is that we make sure everything from our tools that are electrical to the to the electrical equipment that we use on farms, the generators, irrigation systems, large motors that we might be operating things, power washers and so forth, that they are grounded.
Actually, most electrical equipment is grounded twice. Once by the line that feeds the electricity to the equipment, that's usually done by the electric company, and once at the equipment, say a generator or an electric motor on an irrigation system.
You have to have a ground wire that's connected to the circuits and also to the metal casings of this equipment. And that then is connected to a ground rod. That ground rod, typically, it can be copper is ideal. It needs to be at least a half inch in diameter. You can use steel or iron rods. They need to be about 5/8 inch in diameter, minimum diameter. And then that rod needs to be in the ground at least 8 feet.
8 feet deep to ground the equipment. It simply means the path of least resistance for electricity that might get free of the system is down the rod and into the ground. By the way, proper grounding techniques for the farm can be found in the National Electric Code. The code was updated this year by the National Fire Protection Association and is available for purchase online. Just search National Fire Protection Association or National Electric Code in Google.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
I talked to Baba Heron this morning about that story and electrocutions, and there's a reason behind that. Of course, you may have already heard that two teenagers were killed yesterday afternoon. They were detasseling in a field in northwestern Illinois and came in contact with an irrigation system that was energized in some form. I don't know exactly how that form took place. It doesn't really matter. It shouldn't happen. It's not right. And our thoughts and our prayers... Our thoughts and our prayers go out to those families. Now, agriculture is very dangerous, and if you are on the farm, make sure you're safe. I ran the grounding story to make sure you understand how things are grounded. You can contact Baba Heron at the University of Illinois. If you don't understand how to ground something and how it should be properly grounded, you can get hold of the National Electric Code online. Search Google again. It's a 1,000-page book, but there is a farm subset in that book, and you can buy it, I think, separately. It's important that you stay safe out there. We hope that that happens, and we are very, very saddened when it does not. I'll return in just a couple of minutes, not with the agricultural weather forecast, but we'll talk with Harry Cooney then. He's at GrowMark in Bloomington, Illinois, and we'll take up the agricultural energies. So long to some of our radio stations now. For the rest of you, stay with us here on Illinois Public Media and the Closing Market Report. We'll come back in just 2 minutes.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
On this day in agricultural history in 1822, Gregor Mendel was born. Mendel was an Austrian botanist whose work was the foundation of the science of genetics. working mainly with garden peas, some 28,000 plants over 7 years, he discovered what was to become known as the laws of heredity. Mendel coined at least two present-day terms in genetics, recessiveness and dominance. In 1915, Sir Sanford Fleming died. He devised the present system of time zones while working for the Canadian Pacific Railway. In 1954, the Miller Pesticide Amendment was passed. It established procedures used by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency to determine the maximum allowable pesticides that can remain on raw agricultural products for human consumption. The amendment stated no additive shall be deemed to be safe if it is found to induce cancer when ingested by man or animal, or if it is found after tests which are appropriate for the evaluation of safety of food additives to induce cancer in man or animals. And in 1993, the Commodity Futures Trading Commission approved final rules prohibiting the practice of dual trading by floor brokers unless an exemption is granted by the CFTC. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Tuesday afternoon. On the phone line with us is Harry Cooney. He's at GrowMark in Bloomington, Illinois. Thanks so much for taking the time, Harry. We do appreciate it.
Yes, Todd.
Well, let's start off with a couple of things. It's been contentious in Washington, D.C. I watched the president speak last night and then Mr. Boehner come on afterwards, and it was pretty clear that there was not going to be a friendly end to the fight over the debt situation. Can you talk to us about what that means to the agricultural world and the energy markets?
Well, it's interesting. We're in that period of time right now where it seems like nobody wants to agree, and we don't have any more insight here than the majority of the rest of the people do. But we know that in the end, there will be some compromise or something hammered out. We don't exactly know in what form or shape or the timing of all this. It seems like it has to get done here in about the next week or so. But we are fairly confident that something will get accomplished and we'll move ahead. What it does to the markets, one scenario could be that the dollar starts to rally a little bit. The dollar has sold off quite a bit here over the past week, and the dollar is kind of in a little bit of an oversold condition right now. And people have been dumping dollars, selling them, because of a little bit of a lack of confidence in getting this debt situation resolved. But if they can get that resolved like we think they probably will be, then the potential is to have a little rally in the dollar, which may allow commodities, oil or oil prices right in there with the commodities, may allow a little bit of a sell-off if the dollar would rally. However, I think that sell-off in energies would most likely be short-lived, because the seasonal studies still suggest higher prices in energies out into late summer and into early fall.
And sometimes those seasonal studies are driven by demand. In this case, I want you to take up diesel fuel in particular.
Yeah, diesel fuel demand is real interesting. Diesel fuel demand this year is almost on the same course that it was last year, meaning that diesel fuel demand weakened quite considerably in the last part of the summer last year, only to come back in the fall and winter. We're following that pattern very closely this year, where diesel demand has fallen off quite a bit here in the past month or two, and so it shows a little bit of a slowing of the economy.
We anticipate that demand will start picking back up as fall approaches, though. It does show that the economy is a little bit of soft in here, and a little softer than what some of the economists had projected that it was going to be.
And a very short word on world oil trends.
Well, world oil demand is projected to be nearly 90 million barrels in 2012, and I just want to leave you with the fact that the market has probably not rallied overall to a high enough level to snuff off this world oil demand. So that's going to be a big driver as we get into next year.
Thanks so much, Harry.
Thank you, Todd.
Harry Cooney is with GrowMark. He's in Bloomington, Illinois. And that wraps up this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.